Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you joined us this morning. Today is Wednesday. It's our friendly witch doctor day. We try to touch on some subjects that have a bit of controversy sometimes because so many of us find out a little bit of information and we pass it around, and like that old game of gossip, or everybody calls it something different, where you whisper something to somebody and by the time it gets to the other side of the room, it's an entirely different story. Well, that's true of a lot of medical advice, a lot of stories from family members in regard to illnesses or chronic pain that many of us go through. Today we thought we'd talk about spinal meningitis. Most of you know that listen on a regular basis that my great-grandchild was diagnosed with spinal meningitis about almost 2 weeks ago now, about 12 days ago. And he was very, very near death. And he is surviving. He is much, much better. This is one of those times when modern medicine has really, really been worth its weight in gold. It was a very bumpy ride. I will be very honest about it. I just met this child. He was born in Missouri, and he turned 5 months old while he's been in the hospital. And he was born with other issues. And his life promised to be bumpy already. And then this happened to him. And we have a lot of mixed emotions about the way it happened and what took place and a lot of questions. And, of course, when you ask questions in a hospital setting, you get almost as many different kinds of answers as you do from the family. I hate to say that, but you do. Because many times medical answers, just like other answers, are modified a little bit by personal opinion. And that's okay, but it often makes the answers very, very different. In the very beginning, when we realized that's what was going on with this baby, I was very upset because I lost a baby sister to spinal meningitis about 50 years ago. So, of course, my story with it was a sad one. So I was sad, and I was worried, and I was scared. I am very grateful that this little boy is okay, and so is the rest of the family. I'm going to bring Shelley in because I think she did some research. I did some research. So we're going to talk a little bit about this. And then we're going to move on to something that is an enemy of many, and that is chronic back pain. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you today?
Good.
Say that again, honey. It cut out.
It's a little chilly, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It well, when I watched the news late last night, they said the temperature was going to drop again. Pretty funky weather for us. I mean, it's high 80s in the middle of the day. Yeah. And everybody, one of my granddaughters called me last night, and she sounds terrible. I said, honey, what's the matter? She goes, Grandma, I woke up like this. Is it because of my cat? I said, I don't think so. It sounds like you've got a bad cold. And,
it's difficult for the body to adjust when the temperatures keep fluctuating pretty wildly over here. I mean, we drop 20, 25 degrees from one day to the next, and then it's back up being warm. So the body's like all confused.
That's true. That's true. It's when the weather changes as much as it does and when our winds are blowing the way they are, we have, we're susceptible to also all of the pollen and all of that kind of stuff that's in the air. So you not only catch a cold, but a lot of times people have allergic reactions to all the stuff that's blowing around in the air. So I have a little scratchy throat this morning, and I keep losing my voice. But I don't feel bad or anything. So, and I think that is from the wind in the air. So, did you, as I was saying, you know, the baby, his name is Alan. He gets called everything from Junior to Bubby. It's
aww,
hard to call a little baby Alan because it just sounds like a grown-up's name, you know. I know how they felt because my oldest son's name was Norvin, and I never looked at him and called him Norvin. He called every pet name in the book and then ended up being called Little Spike, just like his father. So, but he is just so, so much better. However, they don't intend to send him home from the hospital. We get mixed answers. He's already been there about 12 days. I think today is day 13. And they're looking at minimally 2 more weeks and possibly 4 more weeks. So he's still on an IV that goes into his groin for the antibiotics. And now they've taken away one of the antibiotics and give it to him orally, which is great-grandma was a part of that last night. And I said, you know what? I've already done all this so many times. I only want to be here for the good stuff. I only want to be here now when he's happy and I don't have to hold his head and he doesn't have to look at me with those big blue eyes like, Grandma, why are you letting them do this to me, you know?
Does this mean has bacteria? Because when I did the research, I found there's actually 5 types of meningitis.
That's true. I've always been told 4, but I found out the same thing, Shell, when I did my little research. And I also found out something very new this week in regard to the meningitis. And that is, what have I done here? Oh, well. I found out that this baby got meningitis from MRSA. Now, we've talked about MRSA, and we know that MRSA is a strain of bacteria that is mutated to the point of being difficult to get rid of.
Right.
And it's like so many other things out there. We've talked about all of these things, bugs, bacteria, all the things that have just grown past our knowledge and have made themselves into monsters that it's very difficult to eradicate. So infectious disease doctor, another one, the first one we met was awesome, and I believe he is the biggest reason this baby survived because he treated this very aggressively. And made sure early on that he did MRIs, he did a brain scan, because in meningitis, the fluid, the infected fluid, well, the fluid in your spine gets infected. And, of course, your spine carries the fluid up to your brain. And if there's a bacteria or a poison in it, then the first thing that can be caused by spinal meningitis, of course, is brain damage. And it can be severe. And in Alan's spinal fluid was MRSA. So it compounded everything, yes. So there was lots of swelling, but it was like in his body, his head, his face swelled. His face got really puffy. His little arms, he's a chubby little guy to begin with, but his arms and his hands swelled so much it was hard for him to open and close his hands.
Oh, my God.
And their backs get stiff.
So he had like edema throughout his body?
Yes, yes, yes.
Wow.
And when you tried to lift him, when he was really fussy, if you tried to lift him, it hurt. You could tell that it hurt because he was already stiff, But like he couldn't, the doctor said to us one night, he said to Melissa and I, if he gets in a position and is able to close his eyes and relax, that means, you know, he's in a position that he hurts less in. And they did not induce a coma. They did not. They gave him, you know, like over-the-counter pain relief. Nothing else, because when you give something heavy, when you're worrisome about brain damage, the brain can shut down and it's all over.
That's
so
right. Yep.
Sedating him heavily was out of the question. And I will tell you, at 65 and having been in the hospital in almost every scenario anybody could possibly imagine for other people, and a caregiver to other people in the hospital, I've never seen a child so sick and not be in a coma. Never.
Wow.
He
really
he was awake.
Yeah.
He was awake throughout.
He's got, for a lot of the problems that he has probably one of the strongest constitutions of any child I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, it's that's what the doctors say, too. They were like, you know, wow. And I said, well, you know, sometimes you're born with all these other issues, and, you know, it's like the man who can't see can hear really, really well. And maybe that's what kicks in, you know. So I don't know, but he is. I mean, he weighs 20 pounds. He just turned 5 months old, and he weighs 20 pounds.
Oh.
So he's a little, and he growls like a little bear when he's playing. I mean, he's really a special personality. So what is going on now is just constant antibiotics. But now what they've said when they do a blood test, there's almost more antibiotics in his bloodstream than there is blood.
Yeah.
So that's why they took
him. When I go through what I, that's why a lot of, not mainstream doctors, but a lot of integrative or alternative doctors saying that when you treat meningitis, it is very, very beneficial to add some supplementation. And they go, and I have a list of 5 of the 10 most common natural supplements that actually help the body to recover more quickly and more thoroughly. So I'll go through that in a minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, he is doing much better, thank God, and he is happier. I'll tell a little cute story because this is really kind of sad news to start a day with for even people who don't know him, because everybody feels the same way about a baby. He has a favorite blanket, and I mentioned the other day that I was there, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I got to wash this blanket. It smells like every kind of antibiotic he's had and a few other things that are, you know, I'm not sure what they are. So I took it home to wash it, and Melissa said, Graham, he really missed his blanket last night. So before I went yesterday, I called, and I said, is his blanket dirty again? And she goes, yeah. She said, they spilled something on it, and he spit up on it. And, of course, just being in the bed with him. It's, you know, because she can't immerse him in the tub, so all he gets is washcloth baths. And so I said, okay. So I stopped at Walmart, and I got him another. It's one of those real soft, furry blankets that he loves.
Uh-huh.
So I got him another one at Walmart, and so I can trade back and forth, wash one day, and he has the other one, so he sleeps better. Now, you won't believe this, because I didn't. But I take the other blanket away from him. He wakes up. He was asleep when I got there. And he wakes up. And he's a little bit cranky when he wakes up. And I walked over to him and I said, what's the matter? And he was like, you know, like, yeah, hi, but, you know, I feel crappy, kind of an attitude, you know. So I took the stinky blanket off of him. And we washed him and put some medicine under his neck. Under his neck is a big rash because of all the antibiotics and the spitting and all that kind of stuff. So one of the nurses came in, and we gave him the oral antibiotic, which was terrible. And And he kept looking at me like, I can't believe you're letting them do this to me. And so then we cleaned him up, and he didn't have the blanket on, so I got out the new blanket. And I shook it all out and everything, and I put it over him. And that baby, feet, legs, and arms, grabbed a hold of that blanket and hugged it. And just
aww,
grinned from ear to ear. It was, like, so cute. I was like, who would believe that a five-month-old would be so animated over a blanket?
Yeah.
But it just made him so, he just kept hugging the blanket, rubbing it against the sides of his cheeks and grinning at us. It was so sweet.
There is something magical about blankets. I mean, you see kids that, like, I'm told they're 5 or 6 years old, just have that one blanket and it's tattered and torn, and yet it's some sort of a security,
mm-hmm,
you know, a source of security for them. You know, as long as they have that blanket. I mean, I've seen kids that you know, become years old, and they have that blanket they started with, and it can get shredded and torn and be the size of a hand towel, and they still don't want to let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
True. That is true.
Yeah.
And I think that's the deal with him. And he just obviously likes the feel of it. But he was so happy to get that blanket. The nurse came back in and she says, "What'd you do?" And I said, "He got a new blanket." And she says, "Oh, that's too funny." And the deal is now. And of course, he's also been on a list since March 10th. To be recasted again for his club feet. So that has been on hold, so that's an issue.
Right,
The birth defects with his heart are kind of, as he grows, they're kind of repairing themselves. So we're hoping that all of that stuff is just going to be, you know, with growth, that's just going to continue to get better. And there is no damage in his brain. But the fact that this MRSA, this mutated bacteria, can be a part of spinal meningitis, even makes it more of a serious issue. So one of the things I want to get across to everybody today, severe headaches in a small child or a baby, crankiness, if they're outside in the bright sunlight, and you can see that the light is hurting their eyes, or if they're 3 or 4 or 5 years old and they can tell you that the light hurts their eyes, if they feel just overall achy, their necks hurt, their heads hurt, get them to an emergency room or the family pediatrician. Normally, spinal meningitis, you know, kind of happens in onslaughts. When we first got to St. Mary's, that was the first question I asked, because I feared that's what he had, and they were doing the spinal tap, and so I knew that's what they thought he had. And I said, has there been an outbreak of spinal meningitis? And they told me no. Now, I can believe that or I can disbelieve that. Since we've been there, I've asked several times. Melissa has heard, because that poor child hasn't even left the hospital at all. She showers there, she sleeps there, she's there. And she says she's heard through the hospital grapevine that there's been a couple cases, which is not to, my intent is not to start mass hysteria. It's just to make people aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, headaches, a little kid, if you say you have a headache all the time, you're 3-year-old. If they don't feel just right, they're going to tell you they have a headache. If you have a back problem, which we're going to talk about today, and you say, oh, my God, my back hurts, mommy can't do that because my back hurts, then you're 3-year-old. When they don't feel just right, they're going to tell you they have a backache. Do you see the correlation between what you do and how they express the fact that they don't feel so good is usually going to come from the things that you say all the time.
Right.
You know, that's just what happens. So you have to, the things, though, that they talked about and the things that I found online, sensitivity to bright light, sunlight in particular, headaches, sometimes a low-grade temperature, sometimes a skyrocketing temperature. if they indeed are sick and the sickness is elevating. So just keep an eye on those kind of things. And everybody, wash your hands all the time. Because your hands, your baby's hands, your child's hands carry more germs than the biggest rat you've ever seen in your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So wash your hands. Have you noticed in every hospital now, in every doctor's office, you walk down the hallway, there's a million stations with antibacterial soap. That's mm-hmm. how important it is. Wash
yeah, well,
your hands.
Do you see that all the time now? The sanitizing hand wash stations all over cruise ships. The last two cruises on, when you're out at sea with hundreds or in some cases thousands, you know, one ship I went, there was 4,000 people on the ship. They have those hand sanitizing stations in every corridor and every bathroom all over the ship. You can't walk, like from one corridor to the next without there being one of those stations right on the corner. Because if there's an outbreak out on open sea, I mean, they don't, you know, they have a hospital on board enough to take care of a couple of people, but not if, you know, thousands of people end up coming down with something because they're in a contained environment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that you really see that a lot on ships, you know, these cruise ships that are out on the water for days on end.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that that's important to understand, that if everybody gets that, then the sense of urgency should be very obvious. And I think that you really, really need to pay attention to what everybody's saying about that. And something else I see in little kids, and I think that it's important to think about this, is dirty fingernails. And a little kid that has dirty fingernails, how many times a day do you see your child's hand in their mouth? 100? 1,000? I mean, you know, really. So at my kitchen sink, in my bathroom, I have those little tiny scrub brushes for me. Because since I quit biting my nails, which was like, I don't know, 25 years ago or something like that, when I finally quit biting my nails, my nails can get really long, and all of a sudden I'll look down and think, oh, my God, I look like one of those queens that don't do anything and have those long daggers, and I have to trim my nails. But one of the reasons I do it is because it disgusts me how much crap gets underneath your fingernails.
Yep, yep.
So I'm always, doing the scrubbing with the scrub brush, and I think that little kids should learn how to do that too. Scrub with the scrub brush. It's good for their nails. It's good for their cuticles. It's good health for their hands and their nails to do that. So all of these things are so important.
Let me run through this list of the types and some of the most common treatments. It's really kind of like bullet points. I'm not reading paragraphs of information. But it'll give us it'll give everybody kind of like a working knowledge of what they are and what the general treatments are. And then, I have a couple of natural that they say that they say boost the efficacy of the medical protocol.
Okay, good.
All right. So we have all right. So the first center that I checked was the website for the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and that's where I found the list of the five types. They describe meningitis as actually an inflammation of the protective membrane that covers the brain and spinal cord. They're known as the menges. So meningitis is the inflammation of that membrane. It's usually caused by an infection, but it can also be caused from an injury, cancer, or certain types of drugs. The severity and treatment depends on the type it is, and there's five. Bacterial meningitis obviously is caused by a bacteria. It's usually, I don't know how to pronounce this, Neisseria meningitis with a D, D-I-S, or Streptococcus are the most common bacterial causes. viral, which is obviously caused by viruses, such as enteroviruses and herpes simplex. Parasitic meningitis obviously is caused by parasites and is more commonly seen in undeveloped countries. It would be very rare to find it, you know, like in a developed country, you know, where there's clean water and things like that. And it's usually caused by Angiostrongylus, which is a type of parasite that contaminates food and water. Fungal meningitis, caused by inhaling spores. So this is an inhalant form of the disease from people that inhale certain types of spores, such as Cryptococcus and Histoplasma. People with diabetes, HIV, and certain cancers are at a higher risk for fungal meningitis because they tend to be more sensitive to fungal infections, period. And then there's non-infectious meningitis, which would be a non-contagious form. It's not spread from human to human. It can be caused by certain cancers. It can be caused by systemic lupus. And it can be caused by certain drugs. And because remember, this is an inflammation. So not infection isn't the only thing that can cause inflammation in the body. All right, there are certain drugs that can actually cause inflammation of this membrane. And head injury, and that makes sense because obviously we know that injuries cause inflammation. So if you have some sort of an injury, you can develop meningitis because remember, it's not always bacterial or viral, but it is an inflammation. So injury and even brain surgery can cause that inflammation. So that those are all the types of non-infectious. Now, on the Medicine Plus website, which is a service of the U.S. National Library of Medicine in cooperation with NIH, which is National Institute of Health, they say that generally the treatment for is either antibiotics or antiviral, depending on whether it's bacterial or viral, okay? And that they will use that in conjunction with medicines to deal with the brain swelling, and it's usually medicines that are used for shock and seizure. So those medicines are usually used as the anti-inflammatory to try to bring the swelling down. The swelling is where most of the pain comes from and the seizure risk, because the possible complications of this are subdural effusion, which is a buildup of fluid and pressure. And again, that causes other complications. But you want to diminish that subdural effusion. Brain damage, if the pressure remains there too long, you can start damaging sections of the brain. Hearing loss, seizures, and then hydrocephalus. Now, hydrocephalus is what you were just talking about a few minutes ago. Hydrocephalus is water on the brain. And there are some babies that are born with a defect in their spinal cord, which allows this leakage. And there are ways to deal with it, but some of the symptoms like you were talking about, if you get a child that really is complaining too much of a headache, there are certain things you can watch for in an infant. If the eyes constantly appear to gaze downward, like you said, light sensitivity, it like almost hurts them to look straight up, you know, to look at you or up. They're always looking down. Irritability, seizures. If you see a baby having seizure, that could be a symptom. Sleeplessness and vomiting. And in older children, if you see all of a sudden they start having a loss of bladder control motor function, like all of a sudden they start getting clumsy and things like that, and again, vomiting in older children as well. So what they say is that some of the natural supplements, and this one article was talking about, the fact is that it's very important to supplement naturally to help the meds along, because the meds are attacking the bacteria or the virus or the fungus, but they're not really doing anything to support the immune system to strengthen it. So the five top natural supplements are garlic, which is both antiviral and antibacterial, ginseng and chlorella. Using those together, it's a storehouse of essential nutrients, trace elements, and enzymes. And the ginseng actually promotes brain clarity. Colloidal silver, which you and I know from the Institute, is anti-everything. It's a natural antibiotic. It's antiviral, antifungal. It has both disinfectant and antiseptic properties. So colloidal silver is one of the best, highest integrity products to use, especially when you're talking about meningitis. Olive leaf extracts, which are very high in antioxidants, the body becomes very, very high with free radicals when you suffer something like this, and this helps the body to collect them and rid them through the elimination glands, elimination process of the body. And then the last one they talk about is something called Zell Oxygen Plus. Now, I've heard of this product, and it's rich in amino acids, bioactive enzymes, and vitamins. And basically what it does is it fortifies the body, and it strengthens the integrity of the immune system. So that's kind of meningitis, standard treatments, and natural treatments in a nutshell.
I think that you've covered most of those kind of things. I do want to say something about the hearing. That's the next thing that they're doing to the baby, is they're checking his hearing. They will also be checking his eyesight, although we and I talked about that last night, because if he's on my lap and Melissa goes outside to walk around the courtyard at the hospital or something to get some fresh air, and she comes in and says, "I'm back, Grandma," or says, "Hi, Bubby," or something like that, his eyes shoot right over to her. So we're pretty sure that it hasn't affected his hearing. And he still enjoys being sung to, and he absolutely, you get his attention if you just say his name or he knows that you're talking to him, he looks right at you. So we're, of course, hoping for the best in that regard. But it has been a very scary ordeal, and I think some of the things that you just mentioned, you know, let's touch a little bit on the colloidal silver. We've talked about this on the show before, and we know that colloidal silver is available in a nasal application. And
yes,
one of the things the nurses have said to us at the hospital, which I am aware of, but I was so pleased to have her say it to us, your nose hairs are major carriers of bacteria, and that's why so many people have problems when they're on an airplane and somebody else is sick for a really, really long trip on an airplane.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons we started making a kit for the guests at the Institute to take home with them, especially if they were visitors from European areas where they had like a 10 or 12 or sometimes a 14-hour flight. We would put together a kit, and one of the most important things was the nasal application of the colloidal silver. So they have done that with the baby too. You know, they take a specimen from the inside of his little nose. So that is important to realize. And again, it's all about, you know, it's a baby picks their nose, you know, and then puts their hand in their mouth. I mean, I know this sounds gross, everybody, but it happens. So wash their hands. Wash
right.
Their little body. Everybody's supposed to take a shower every day. Every day. And I'm adamant about that, because I am that way about myself, and I was always that way about my kids. AJ gets mad at me all the time. He'll play outside, be all sweaty, come in and sit on my lap, and I say, "Shower time. Graham, I'll take one in the morning." "You're not going to bed like this. You are not. You won't sleep." You know, get it. Go take a shower. So such a simple thing can keep you relatively safe from those kind of bacteria. I mean, I don't even know why any thought is necessary. So did you find any more information about the viral type of meningitis? Because I didn't. Did you find anything about that, or
steps?
It's just another, viral meningitis is almost identical to bacteria, except that it's caused by a virus, not a bacteria. So you're not going to use antibiotics to treat it. Most of the sites that covered viral meningitis, when you get in there, they talk about bacterial, and they say, and another form is viral, which is caused by, and then it gave a couple of the most common viruses, like the herpes simplex, which causes it. And it's just, I mean, if somebody has some sort of susceptibility where it, the only thing I didn't see, and I guess this is the next thing I'll research, is how does it get into the spinal cord? Because from my understanding of the spinal cord and the brain, it's like a sealed system. It's like a pulmonary system. So I'm trying to figure out how something gets in there, although blood does get in there. So is it carried in? I mean, blood doesn't get in there. There's no blood. So, but obviously it's a fluid system of the body, so things do get in there. I'm trying to figure out how a bacteria or a virus or something like that would get in there. Now, like with the nose breathing in spores, I've gotten headaches from allergies before, okay? So if I breathe in mold or something, I don't think it would be meningitis, but it could have caused an inflammation. One of the things they talked about is that there's meningococcal diseases, which is not necessarily meningitis, because it doesn't actually affect the fluid in the spinal cord. So you can have swellings of that layer of membrane without it actually being meningitis, because I know that I've had sinus infections brought on by fungal infections that did go away after a couple of days but were pretty intense, but didn't actually get into the spinal fluid itself, so it didn't turn into meningitis. But there was the headache was not normal. It was so intense that this one time I actually couldn't get out of bed for a whole day, kind of like a migraine, and it was as a result of breathing in mold spores. So, but the only difference between the viral and the bacterial is the source of the infection. And then you would treat it with antiviral meds instead of antibiotics. But with regard to the holistic supplements, you would use them across the board, whether it's bacterial, fungal, or viral.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, so it really kind of all boils down to, I don't want to make everybody germaphobes. But I do want to make sure that everybody understands that we live in a world of high bacterial count. And I'm not sure that washing your hands and things like that is going to protect you from a virus. I'm not sure about that. How do you feel about that, Shelley?
Sorry about that. No. Yeah, you did for a second there, but I'm back. The antibacterial drugs really don't help with viruses because, again, they don't respond to antibiotics. They're not a bacteria. I have my own – I mean, I think it's good to be clean. I don't know that it's a good idea to be fanatical because I think if you go too far the other direction, then your body doesn't build up any natural antibodies. I think in a hospital environment, you have no choice because you don't want to take germs from one patient to another. So I think having the hand sanitizers is very good. But I think if you just keep yourself generally clean, like you said, I think the fingernails, I have a fingernail brush too, and I know a lot of people that don't use them. I don't like the way my fingers feel. I don't like it, like if I see dirty nails and stuff, I just don't like the way it feels. So I scrub my fingernails every day with a fingernail brush, and it almost revitalizes it. If I'm working outside and I've worked in the dirt, I actually don't feel clean until I've gotten my nails clean, which is an odd thing. And if I look at other people and I see their nails are dirty, it is kind of a telltale sign that they're opening themselves up for some sort of infection because you're always touching your face and your mouth and food with those hands. So those types of things, I think, are very, very important to reduce the amount of toxins. I mean, basically, that you're putting toxins in your body, and then you're just giving your body something else to fight. But I think that some parents can get carried away with making the child wash too often, and you have to allow the body to be around some contaminant so that it can build up natural antibodies in little bits and pieces. So I'm not sure that I agree that it has to be too worrisome for parents. But obviously taking a shower every day, making sure their nails are clean, those I agree with you 100%, because it just helps the body to have a little bit, you know, better starting ground.
The point is, a shower once a day, but washing your hands several times a day is imperative. And I don't mean every hour, and I don't mean scrubbing up to your elbows like you're going in to do a surgery. I just mean washing your hands. Outside,
right.
And you play with the dog and the cat, and you dig in the dirt, and you pick up a worm. I mean, this is what kids do.
Right.
You do all these kinds of things, and you're right. We do have to build up antibodies that fight against the bacteria, and the best way to do that is just like, I mean, the shots that started how many years ago, 100 years ago, to protect us against certain childhood diseases. That's what they believed, that they believed that a little taste of the illness would help your body build antibodies so that you never got the illness. Now, today, we're in a whole other mindset, a lot of us. Not everybody, but there's a lot of us who believe the shot isn't such a great idea for some of us because it actually makes us sick. So
right.
Lots of controversy in regard to that. But
right.
nature's way of building antibodies, like Shelley just said, a little bit of dirt doesn't hurt anybody. A little, you know, all the other things that you come across and everything, I do believe strengthen your own personal ability to fight off bacteria and disease. Absolutely. But it's still a safety precaution.
Right.
To sure. And if you're talking about a baby who 15 other people come in every now and then, like Sunday afternoon, you're over at Grandma's house and 15 different people pick up your baby, your baby needs a bath.
Right, right.
You don't know where the 15 people have been. I mean, you know, without overthinking it, just realize that when all those different people have touched your child or let your child hold their finger or do any of those kind of things, you need to wash the baby's hands.
Right.
Easy.
Right.
So, okay, I want to touch on some simple things to help strengthen lower back and shoulders and things like that that lead to chronic back pain. And I want to tell you that every adult I know, and some kids, and by kids I mean, you know, like older teenagers, but almost every person I know has either chronically or at one time or another in their life suffered with back pain. Sometimes it's heredity. Sometimes it has a lot to do with your body mass. Sometimes it has a lot to do with your type of job. Sometimes it has a lot to do with how you walk, how you stand. All those things add in to the structure of your bones and the protection that your back, the way it is set up, protects the nerves that come out and run down your legs. One of the worst back problems is sciatica. Sciatica means that someplace in your spine, where your vertebrae are, in between your vertebrae come some nerves that run down your legs. If you've ever been lucky enough to look at one of those fabulous models that so many pharmaceutical companies put out now and chiropractic offices and everything to really show you what is taking place in your body. You can see that if you sit all day in a chair and your legs are hanging down, maybe on the floor, maybe just barely touching the floor, depends on how you like to sit, or maybe your knees are drawn up, you're putting pressure on certain parts of your body.
Right.
So what happens is a nerve gets pinched. Or maybe even when you were 7 years old, you fell out of a tree and landed on your butt. And while you're 7 years old, 8 years old, 15 years old, it's not bothering you. Now you're older. And now that old injury, if you'll excuse me, comes back to bite you in the butt. Okay. So one of the first things everybody can remember to do that will help, will not fix it, absolutely will not fix it. I am not saying that, but I want you to know that if you, before you put all the weight on your spine, before you step out of your bed in the morning, if you will stretch, really stretch. Did you ever watch a cat or even a dog or any other kind of animal? I love it when you see the lions and the tigers and all of those magnificent large cats. They stretch like there's no tomorrow. And is there anything more graceful than watching a cat? Stretch, everybody. Alleviate the pressure on some of those nerves. Stretch your spine, stretch your legs, stretch your muscles, stretch your tendons, stretch everything. Slowly, gently, just stretch before you put all the weight on your feet again. If you do this every morning, this will eventually be of some assistance to your back pain. I believe in chiropractic, so does Shelley. I think a good chiropractor is a necessity in an adult life. Why? Because stress also makes us tighten up, makes us hold our shoulders a different way, makes us... I always laugh when I say to women, I've been counseling somebody and they're sitting there talking to me and I say, stop talking. And they stop talking. I say, okay, I want you to push your shoulders down. And they're like, what? And I said, not with your hands. Just put your arms down at your side and push your shoulders down with your muscles. Why do you want me to do that? I say, because if your shoulders got any tighter, I swear to God, your head would explode. And they look at me and laugh, and I say, please, do that. If you want to get some use out of listening and talking, you have to be a little bit relaxed. Pushing your shoulders down, stretching your arms out, and doing circular motions with your arms if your pain is in your neck, headaches, shoulder stress. Maybe you sit at a desk all day. And how do you sit at your desk? Your feet should be raised. Never have your feet flat on the floor when you're sitting in a chair. Your feet should be raised. I don't mean elevated. I don't mean on a stool. I just mean lifted. There are things that you can buy at Office Depot and Staples and things like that that go under your desk that lift your legs up so that you're not putting all that pressure on your lower back.
Right.
All of these are beneficial. Another thing that is incredibly beneficial to all of us is massage. I know that it's a luxury. I know that many of us think that we, first of all, can't afford to have a massage all the time. I'm not talking about all the time. I'm talking about every now and then, give yourself the luxury of a massage. It doesn't need to be deep tissue. I do not recommend a deep tissue massage unless you are a avid massage getter. You know, if you're not getting one all the time, don't do deep tissue. It will release toxins. It will make you sorer than when you started. But a nice Swedish massage will relax you and alleviate some of that back pain. And, of course, at the end of the day, if you've got serious back pain, a lot of people are afraid of back surgery. A lot of people are afraid of all the things that are available to you out there. Now the big thing is cortisone shots. They go in with a long needle and deaden the nerves in there. I am not an advocate of this, which is not to say you shouldn't be. I am just stating a fact. I think the side effects of cortisone are tremendous, and I do not think that the long-term effects are great. But I also wouldn't say to somebody, oh, go get back surgery. But getting three different opinions from three orthopedic surgeons, if you really need back surgery, you probably should have it. Because it doesn't
Well, with regard, Rainey, with regard to the cortisone, there are pain centers that deal with the pain for someone that either doesn't want the surgery or they're like between. They're not severe enough for the surgery to be the final answer for them, but they're in too much pain to function. There are some pain centers now that have alternatives to cortisone because, like you said, I'm not an advocate of cortisone either. I was told for many years to get cortisone when I had problems with my left shoulder. I never did get it, and now I'm thankful I didn't because there are a lot of complications. It injures some of our other internal organs. So, yeah, it gets rid of the pain, but it doesn't get rid of it permanently, and it doesn't heal that part of the body. It's not a curative. It's strictly for pain management. And there are other ways of dealing with it. So I would highly recommend that somebody seek out one of these pain centers that specifically deal with non-steroid forms of pain management to help and then look into things that might be able to heal what's causing the severe pain. Sometimes surgery is the only option. I'm not a big advocate of surgery, but like in your particular case, I know that sometimes that is the only recourse. My only thing on the back surgery is that it's offered more often than it's needed. And there are cases where it is the only solution, but it should not be your first attack when you have issues with your back, because I've been told like 8 different times that I needed back surgery and I won't have it. And it doesn't mean I'll always be able to stay it off, but so far so good. So far I've been able to not have back surgery and have a fully functioning life. I can just do about anything I want to do. But I do have some restrictions. I do have some damaged discs in my lower back, and obviously they affect me. But the cortisone is something that people should educate themselves on, and it has to be a personal choice, but at least understand what the cortisone is doing, that it's strictly for pain management and it's not healing anything.
Well, and again, something as serious as any kind of surgery, everybody will tell you this, and I'm going to say it too. You should always get more than one opinion.
Right.
And actually, if you are going to a really, really good orthopedic surgeon, he will insist that you see other people. He will insist. The man who did my surgery sent me to 4 different doctors.
Wow.
And he said, I want you to go talk to them. Here, take your MRI, show them, see what they say. And it was unanimous. And I never feared it. For one thing, I couldn't live like that. I really couldn't. And I've never been sorry that I did it. And I know that you don't hear that a lot, so you can believe me when I tell you I was in a place that I was in my 40s, and I could not function. If I sneezed, I don't care where I was. I might just start crying. It would hurt me that, or if I was walking and my back was tightened up and I was stressed or something like that and you bumped me, I might start crying. So,
how long did it take you to recover from your surgery?
I'm sorry? Say that again?
How long did it take you to recover from your surgery? Because that was quite a while ago.
I was out of the hospital in 2 days. Everybody else stays 5. I was up about 8 hours after my surgery, walking with a walker, and they sent me home with a walker, and I walked 4 times a day. I started out by just walking around the house, then I walked around the block, then I walked around the neighborhood. Matter of fact, everybody used to, my sister Barbara, who's no longer with us, was with us then because she needed to help me because of a big family and everything. And she would, like, send all the kids out on bicycles, go find your mother, maybe she fell or something, and I'd just be walking. So is tremendous, has healing benefits, but only if you're okay.
Right.
If you're in pain and you're trying to walk and think it's going to make you better, it's going to make you worse. So,
let me ask you, have you seen the commercials? I'm not sure if you're going to know what I'm talking about, but there have been commercials, I guess for about maybe half a year now I've been seeing them. There's a couple of back centers that offer same-day surgery for back pain where these people go in the morning and it's ambulatory. They're not admitted into the hospital. They're going home, like, once they recover, and they're, like, pain-free. So I don't know what the surgery entails, but I do know that back surgery, certain types of back surgery, have really become more simplistic and less invasive. But I don't know what it entails. I don't know if they're just going in there and cutting nerves or if they're actually doing something to reduce the areas of inflammation. But I've seen those commercials a lot. Have you seen them? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. And I don't know what kind of surgery they're talking about, but chances are it's like the laser surgery where they just go, they make a little tiny cut and they go in and they either take away part of the vertebrae that is pushing on the nerves, things like that. There's a lot of things now. Laparoscopic surgery, I think is the name of it.
Yeah.
They can go in with minimal. I mean, I have an incision from my tailbone to my waist.
Wow.
Where my surgery, and I was in surgery for about 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, it was a major surgery. I never had stitches. I remember I said to the doctor, do I need to come back and get the stitches out? He said, do you want me to put stitches in? And I said, well, and I looked at him and he said, no, honey. He says, I put glue over it. And
there's, oh my gosh.
Special, got the glue in it. I have no, you know, I have, you can see the scar. It's just a thin line, but there were never any stitches or anything like that. So, and like I said, that was 25 years ago, or close to 25 years ago. And do I have back pain today? Yes, every now and then I do too much. I'm 65. I'm not the 45-year-old woman I was. I have always been very strong for a woman. I'm a big woman, and I'm strong. And every now and then I forget that I'm 65 and I lift the couch or I do something like that and I hurt my back or I mop all the floors in this 4,000-square-foot house and my back hurts. But it usually goes away, and like I said, I go in the pool. I'm a big advocate of water. Weightlessness in the water
Yes.
is tremendous for bad backs. Being able to stretch in the water without all your weight on you is awesome. Cold water is really good for you. Warm, hot water like jacuzzis and things like that are good for you, but only after you've reduced the swelling from an original injury. So if you have a bad back and it's pretty good for a long time and you do something foolish and you hurt it again, ice, ice cold water, ice pack, ice anything on the area that you hurt to reduce the swelling. The swelling is enhancing the pain, radiating the pain, because now everything's being pinched. So it's important to do that first. Heat
right.
is relaxing. But if you bump your head, or if your kid bumps your head and you got a big lump on your head, do you put heat on it? No. You put ice on it to reduce the swelling. It's the same thing on your back or any other part of your elbows, too. I see a lot of people with water on their elbows, water on their knees from injuries. Ice to reduce the pain, reduce the swelling. Water goes to an injured part of our body. It's our body's way of protecting it, cushioning it. So if you have an inflammation in there. Real quick, turmeric and garlic, too. Awesome, awesome aids in joint pain and any other kind of pain that you have going on in your body. But we're out of time. I knew that we would run out of time on the back. I hesitated about doing both things today on one show. So we will do another show about back pain, and maybe some listeners can call in and tell some of their stories. But I want to wish everybody a great day. Go out there and have a beautiful day. The weather here in Florida is sunny and relatively cool. It's in the 70s. So bless everybody. Have a great day, and I hope you'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye. Bye, Shell. I'm going to call you in a minute.
All right. Sounds good, hon. All right. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful day.